This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work without the right payments API. That's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 255 for Friday, September 25th, 2015. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. We have a very exciting show. A little bit different than I planned, but it's going to work out just fine. It's going to be great. It's going to be exciting. Did I mention exciting? And great?
And great.
And great. That's Andrew Martinick, everybody.
I think it's going to be pretty great and exciting. I just like the sound of 255.
Sounds that was a like whole lot of... Fives
pushing
in there.
300.
Yeah. It's amazing when you stop and think how many we've done. And even then, like, I've been listening to Nerdist podcast a lot lately. It's just incredible, right? I mean, such a good show. But, like, they're on, like, number 2,430. Not that many, but it's a lot. It's pretty impressive. Russell Holly, how are you?
I also am a big fan of 255. That's a good number.
It's some good alliteration, I think. Just 55. That's a good number. Sammy Hagar was a fan of it, and that's a good thing. Hey, you know what we should do? I really need to sell an ad, like, right here on my mic boom. Or okay. Just, we can write messages to people, maybe, since nobody's
get
ever going to
get
them.
You a big mic flag around the...
I mean...
Like, spinning and glittery or something?
I can maybe get Kevin to sell that to somebody, but if not, just...
Sure what kind of price that commands, but hey.
Oh, you know, when I first moved into this office and I was over there and I would put like this space for rent behind me because I didn't have the artwork up because I thought it was funny, even though it wasn't. I thought it was funny. Anyway, how's it going? Welcome to the show. If it's your first time, hopefully it won't be your last time. Let's be perfectly honest about that. Stick around. So, just three of us. Everybody's off doing things, and this next week is about to get insane, so let's just get down to it, I think. Or should we start with voicemails? Let's get down to the voicemails.
That works.
No one's gonna do Jungle Boogie? Get down, get down. Nobody?
Nobody.
Come on, you white boys, let's go. You can do this. Oh, fine. Okay, so yeah, let's do the voicemails, and let me hit some buttons over here and click on some things. Anyone want to place a bet on whether this actually plays right the first time?
I have confidence.
Wow.
Have they failed before?
Not too bad. It's usually a little sluggish because it's running over the network in here.
Usually just means Phil needs to just buy some time while it loads.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's on my network box in here. So anyway, who do we have? Let's start off with Justin. See, look at that. Can't hear him. You know why? I know why.
Shouldn't have had confidence, I guess.
Shouldn't have had confidence. That was your first problem. No, I muted the computer they're playing on. So, Justin, here you go.
Hey, guys. It's Justin from Westfield. A big fan of the site. Been listening from back when it was a double-digit podcast. Not quite single-digit, but in any event, Moto X Pure Edition. I'm really excited for the review. A little bit of inside baseball. I'm kind of curious what's happening these days. Used to be that a phone manufacturer would do an announcement maybe 4 to 6 weeks out from the retail launch. Maybe 2 weeks before that, they'd send out phones to very important websites like your own and some others. And then when the embargo was lifted on the retail purchase or pre-order date, all the reviews would be posted. But seems like things have changed a little bit. Just kind of curious what's happening right now. Phil, I know you've talked about some inside baseball podcasts. I'm kind of curious what's happening these days. So if you could shed any light on that, it'd be very much appreciated. And a big fan of Android Central. So many thanks to you all.
So Justin shot me an email as well. And he's
all
like,
my fault.
He's like, dude, where's your Moto X Pure Edition review? So I'm working on it. What? I can only ignore my family so often. Yeah, I mean, look, the way it works is it is consistently inconsistent. Sometimes everybody gets devices at the same time. Sometimes only a few people get devices at first. Sometimes there are shipping issues. Sometimes there are other technical issues. And we just kind of do the best we can. sometimes there's a lot of kicking and screaming. Sometimes it's perfectly painless. Sometimes the reviews just flow from our fingers onto your screen, and other times it's pulling teeth. And I mean, the Moto X Pure Edition review, I mean, it was kind of a mixture of all that, actually. And then I was just kind of using it for the, you know, past couple of weeks. If you haven't seen it yet, the review finally went up yesterday, and I'm pretty happy with it. I think I could have spent a little more time on the review and like made it a little prettier and added a few other things, but for the most part, we knew what this phone was going to be like, right? It's stock Android. It's a Moto X style, you know, body on the thing. And I mean, and that was just kind of the crux of it for me. It's a predictable phone, right? We needed to know about the battery life. We needed to know about the camera, but that was kind of it. Like, we knew how the software was going to behave. We knew how all of Motorola's customizations were going to behave.
Sort of. The one question I had was the switch to LCD for Moto Display.
Right.
Like, that was something that I wasn't totally sure about. And honestly, I don't even notice it. Like, the whole panel lights up every once in a while at night, and I see that, like, backlight. But I don't really notice a difference. Even when I held it side by side with the AMOLED 2014 Moto X, I don't really notice it. I dig the screen on this phone.
And I think that when I'm looking at it side by side with my 2014, it's kind of apples and oranges a little bit, because I have a white front on the new one and a black front on the old one. And that really, I think in my mind, that makes a difference.
I just wasn't a fan of the white front on there. It stands out so much with the little sensors and the speakers and stuff. It just doesn't look quite as sleek as a black front, especially when you have the Moto Display stuff happening.
I kind of think that maybe I'm regretting my choice of going white this time. So,
yep. That's maybe why I picked a black one this time. Because the white was like this really neat kind of, you know, distraction for the 2014 one when I got it. Because I wanted it and I wanted the bamboo back. But no, the black, I think it gives it, like Andrew said, it's just kind of a sleeker look.
I mean, it's a solid phone. And the thing I kept in the back of my mind as I was writing the review was, it's a $400 phone, essentially. It starts at $400. I don't think I would recommend getting,
which is a $150 drop from what the Moto X 2014 came out at.
Right. I don't think I would recommend getting, you know, a 16 gigabyte version of anything at this point. But it does have, it's a good, you know, it's a good $400 or $500 phone. I was out the door at like 524, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the important part where, I mean, like you said, I don't think that many people will or should buy the $399 version. You know, they're going to probably bump the storage, and they're probably going to, you know, add an extra or add the back for $25 or whatever. And, you know, then you're out, you know, you're looking a lot more like $500 plus, you know, with your tax and things. But the big thing is, you know, I remember when I ordered my last Moto X, you know, I customized it and I added a wood back and I was over $600. So now you're talking about, you know, the customizations are really, you know, more, they're more part of the price, and it's going to be still be reasonable even when you bump the storage and things like that, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, it means this phone's not a cheap phone, but we're not talking about $700 base or $650 base, which is good.
And I wouldn't call it cheap, but Russell and I have been talking about it a lot for the past week or so. Like, there's something about it that just doesn't quite feel as nice as last year's.
Yep.
And that's not to say it's not a nice phone. It's just a little different.
Last year's phone was really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I think something that bothers me frequently, we see it a lot in the comments, we see it a lot in the forums when people say, a phone is a good phone for the price. That usually is a commentary on some kind of shortfall. I don't really feel like the Moto X has any solid shortfalls, and that's what I feel like we should be pointing at when we say it's a good phone for the price. This is an amazing $400 phone.
Usually when we say that, we're damning with faint praise, and we're not in this case.
Right.
So you're saying you'd have no problem with this even if it was retailing at $599?
I think if it was retailing at $599, I would still recommend it, but I still wouldn't. But I would say that it's really clear that it's not as good as the other phones in that price range.
Sure.
Like it would be okay as a $600 phone, but it is a great $400 phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even then, I mean, there's something about it that's just kind of, I hate to say boring to me, but it's just not as exciting a phone as I thought last year's was. That makes sense?
Well, yeah. I think at this point it's become routine, and part of that, this was something that I thought about a lot when I was going through when it occurred to me that there was like no new software for me to push. Mm-hmm. It's because Motorola has been tweaking this thing nonstop.
Oh yeah,
tweaking the last Moto X nonstop. So it's not Motorola didn't come up on stage and goes here's 50 new features that we have for this new phone. They've been rolling features every couple of weeks.
Yeah, Russell would like double check with us that this was something, you know, oh, that's an awesome feature. Yeah, that was added to the 2014 Moto X in this month and that month and that month. Like, they've just continually iterated on this. They're not holding back like 15 features to launch with the phone.
And I don't think we've had another manufacturer be that consistent. HTC might be one of the closest, the next closest, but even then, mm-hmm. Each, you know, the M7, M8, and M9 have very different feels to them, I think. So this might be the most consistent evolution of a phone we've seen in a while.
And I think it says something that you guys, I mean, of course, you've used the phones and you have them there, but I mean, it seems like you weren't clamoring for tons of new features or for Motorola to completely shake up their software. I mean, that was never a problem with the previous Moto X. Both Moto X's and even the new Moto G, that was never the issue. So it's not like we're, you know, oh yeah, I really wish they would slim this down, or I wish they would change this feature or whatever. You were happy with them just bringing the current software into the new phone.
Yeah, and you know, the camera is decent. It's not a horrible camera. I'm not crazy about the camera app itself. I think it's
weird. They really need to give up on this whole manual focus thing and give me back tap to focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it always throws me off. I mean, I get used to the Motorola camera, but it always throws me off when I come from another phone because there's no shutter button and you know, you're used to touching the screen to get metering and focus and stuff. And all of a sudden you just took two pictures.
And you'll get used to that. But I think just in general, it's still way easy to accidentally fire shots off with it.
And I think, you know, the radial menu is really cool and all, but I mean, you look at just opening the camera on a Note 5 and just taking pictures, it's simpler than the purported simple camera on the Motorola.
Yeah.
It has a learning curve to it, which is not necessarily good.
So anyway, that's what's up with the Moto X. I mean, we'll have lots more on it coming up, and Russell's doing some good camera comparisons and stuff.
Yeah.
And not a bad phone at all. Don't take my lukewarm feeling for it as a sign that it's bad.
Well, could you guys
not the case.
Talk about the size really quick?
It's big. It's too big.
You guys haven't been in love with the 5, you know, going bigger than the 5.2.
You're just trying to take the heat off yourself here, aren't you?
Well, so here's the thing.
I want you guys to share my pain.
It's the same size and it's the same height and width as the Galaxy Note 5.
Yep.
Which would be fine if it wasn't almost twice as thick as the Galaxy Note 5. Like the curved Motorola back, the curved Motorola back was something that I loved on the original Moto X because even though it was a little smaller, it gave it this presence in my hand and I really liked it. It is that exact thing that makes the phone unusable with one hand when it's the size of a Galaxy Note 5.
Yep. I mean, it makes the 14 feel so much smaller.
Yeah,
I still like picking up the 14.
It's nice. Funny how just a little change in size can make the same shape go from really good to just unwieldy.
We saw how unwieldy the Nexus 6 is with that same basic shape. Yep. You know, the curved back, it's just really thick and just feels, you know, gigantic.
Yeah, and this gets into that territory. Hmm. It's unfortunate for me, you know. I obviously don't appreciate big phones, and we should hire somebody who does. That's what everybody says about Andrew.
Yep.
I mean, they're not wrong, but... So that's the Moto X. Yeah, we've got more coming up. So, all right, next we have Patrick. What are the odds? I'm going to get this to work the first time. You ready? Try it.
I just realized that was all just a response to a voicemail.
Yes. Here we go, Patrick.
Hey guys, this is Patrick from Hendersonville, Tennessee. Wanted to ask y'all a quick question about the camera showdown between the Moto X and the OnePlus 2. Were those first shot photos y'all posted, or were they the best shot y'all posted? And if they were the best shot, what is the odds of y'all, you know, fully implementing where on every single full review or these camera showdowns or both even, that y'all, you know, put a little thing at the bottom that shows what the first shots look like of each scenario between the cameras? I know it's a little bit more trouble, but it would be awesome, and we would be able to know what we're getting ourselves into when we fork out our money for these products. Anyways, love the podcast. You guys rock it out. Talk to you later.
First off, excellent use of y'all. We need more of that, I think.
Phil would know.
I would. I don't know. Do I use it that often? Do you think?
No. You use it more than I do.
Well, yeah. I would hope so.
At all.
I'm just saying. It's nice hearing my people.
So it's I did first shot. I don't believe in best shot for
really?
Camera comparisons. I take the shot. Whatever I take is whatever happens, because that's how people
life.
Take pictures. That's yeah. People, they pull their phone out, they take a picture, they go to share it on Facebook 10 minutes later, and they go, oh, that sucks. That picture didn't turn out well.
But see, that's their fault. They should be sharing better pictures.
Yeah,
I do it the other way. This is more interesting inside baseball, and I hadn't really thought about it until now. I don't think I generally use the first shot. So, you know, if the first shot's fine, great. But the way I see it is when I'm sharing pictures in a review or for something like that, I want it to be representative of what I would use in using that camera. Why would I purposefully use a bad picture?
In a review, totally. You're absolutely right in mm-hmm. a review. And when I'm taking pictures for a review, I will grab the best of the bunch and use them in a review, because you're right. It's a representation of what the phone is capable of, you know, from its highest marks.
But, versus good a photographer I am to be able to get the shot
right.
the first time.
But so in the camera comparisons that I did for the camera showdowns that I did all this week, the phones were in a tripod, locked. So I wasn't, there was no, you know, my hands weren't shaking there. Everything was framed in exactly the same way. This mm-hmm. was, you know, as close to identical situation as I could generate. And if the camera, you know, takes four tries to autofocus on something before it takes a picture, I'm not going to share the best one. I'm going to share the one that most people are going to take.
Right.
I think in that case, you're probably fine there.
And for what it's worth, on my previous camera comparisons, you know, I did a ton of them for the Galaxy S6, and I very much did the same thing. It was, I had a phone in each pocket. I took one out, you know, focus shot, take another one out, focus shot. And because, you know, that's how people take photos. I mean, I will take two or three, you know, if I realize that it wasn't a good one, but that's, you know, it gets into Russell's point of, well, if it takes two or three, you know, how much is that third one worth if the thing you wanted to take a picture of was only available in the first shot?
And I think we probably have a pretty good feel for, like, whether it's a first shot because we sucked at it or the camera sucked at it.
Sure.
I don't want the picture quality that we're representing to suffer because I suck as a photographer. You know what I mean? Sure. It needs to be less about me as the photographer and more about what the pictures actually look like.
Well, and it also just points out issues with things, you know, these kinds of side-by-side comparisons, because there's so many variables, and, you know, you just try to hold as many things constant as possible that you can actually show the qualities of the camera. But of course, you know, it's all, you know, and then the end result is we're talking about a subjective thing where, you know, whether or not a picture is pleasing to the eye may not fall into, you know, specific parameters about, you know, clarity and contrast and things like that.
It still cracks me up, you know, these, here's a Sports Illustrated photographer using an iPhone 6. Well, I should hope they're good pictures.
Yeah, you give them.
Here's National Geographic photographer with an iPhone 6. Well, no kidding. It was the same thing LG used Colby Brown for the G4. And, like, I hope your pictures are really good, because people pay you to do this.
I want to see the reverse comparison of handing a random person on the street, you know, a 5D Mark III, and
yeah.
see how solid of a picture they take.
No, I'll tell you exactly what it looks like. Go find my hands-on with the original LG Optimus G, which was the first time I used a D700, my first time with a real DSLR. Went all the way to Korea to take pictures that bad. I can show you exactly what happens. It's not good. It was not good at all. Good question, though. Okay, here comes, who's this? This is Paul.
Happy Friday, Android Central. This is Paul from Chicago. I'd like to hear more about the current state of Google Voice. I've had my primary number there in the past, but have since moved it back to T-Mobile. I'm considering moving back to Voice. I moved away previously because of group messages and MMS going into a black hole. Has support for these improved over the last year or so? Also, how do you guys handle two-step authentication with the primary number being in Google Voice? Thanks.
Good question. I've actually moved.
It's an interesting time to come back to Google Voice if you were, because of the way Project Fi is happening.
Right. Yeah. And I've moved over to Fi. I mean, for me, it always seemed like it was, I hate to say stagnant because that's just that overused word, but like Google Voice is there. It works. Nobody's going to break it. Just felt like this legacy thing.
I mean, his main complaint there of MMS group. MMS mm-hmm. has been somewhat fixed. The problem is you can't start group MMSs, but you can receive and reply to full groups. Wasn't a huge issue for me. It just didn't get put on a lot of those conversations, but being able to see them is nice. I wasn't ever going to be the one to start group chats, you know? It just wasn't going to be what I did anyway, so it didn't bother me. But it's still, I don't know, it, like Phil said, it works, but it's just a little clunky and you're just waiting for something to happen with it. I mean, of course, we've been waiting for years for something to happen with it. But
what was it he asked at the end? Was it two-step?
Two-factor authentication. How do you use it if you have Google Voice? And the answer for me is Hangouts. I have Hangouts open on my desktop. I get a two-factor authentication ping and it shows up there.
The only issue I've found with that is it gets a little wonky once you switch to Project Fi, because now that Google Voice number is a Project Fi number, so it's actually more tied to a carrier, and I actually don't get two-step text messages on anything but my Fi number anymore, which means it doesn't show. It only shows up on that Fi phone.
Oh, see, I don't have that.
Yeah, that. See, again, it's just all these wires get crossed, and so that's my issue now.
Well, it only like
shows up on Fi phones.
Yeah, I mean, my Google Voice number is now a Project Fi number, but it all still comes in just fine.
Like, yeah, like see, on all the devices. That's one thing that I've lost, and it's just stuck.
Now the other thing is I use Authy for 99%. I think the only thing that doesn't come in is Facebook, or maybe I think Facebook still uses SMS for whatever reason. I just never fixed it.
Yeah, I will say that other two-step things like banks and other random Microsoft I think does they'll do text message two-step. Those seem to work fine, and if more and more of those are supported by Google Voice, I'm not sure if that's part of that Project Fi integration now or what, but I seem to get those. The real answer is to use an Authy or Google Authenticator app or something instead of using the text messages, just to know for sure. Because then, just to think about it really quick, if your Google Voice number is your backup phone number for two-step auth, and you need your Google account to get into your Google Voice settings, you can run yourself into a bad hole where you can't access it. So, something to think about.
Good question, though. All right, one more. This is from Jean-Paul.
Hi, this is Jean-Paul from New Orleans. I have an Android Wear question. I'm considering purchasing my first Android Wear smartwatch, upgrading from the original Pebble. And you guys have posted about how Android Wear isn't stagnant, but the hardware is intentionally moving more slowly than phones do. With that in mind, would you recommend purchasing a older Android Wear watch, something like the G-Watch R or Asus Zen Watch, which you can get for around $150 on sale now, versus these new Android Wear watches, which are, closer to $250, $300? What would I be missing out on if I purchased an older Android Wear watch versus the new one? All right. Thank you, guys. Love the podcast.
First thing I would say is the new Zen Watch starts at 150, right? The Zen Watch 2?
Yep.
So start with that. But, as far as what you'd be missing?
They're basically nothing, the same inside.
Yeah.
Nothing yet.
Yet.
I think, wasn't sure exactly how to answer that, but I think you're in the same place that I am.
No, I think we can answer it. Android police opened up the Huawei watch and found what very much looks like speakers in there. I think if we look at the other new watches, we will find what very much looks like speakers in there. That would be the only thing I can think of. And officially, nobody said anything about that yet. So
But yeah, if that's not a thing that you're interested in or you don't want to wait for, and like that feature is not worth $100, I mean, the G-Watch R at $150 is a, if you like the style of it, is solid. I mean, I was using the original G-Watch the last couple weeks, and it's fine too. The screen's not quite as bright as the new ones, but again, you're talking about a difference of, I mean, even the LG Watch Urbane is only like $250 now instead of $350. It's, you know, MSRP, and that's a good deal there. Now you're talking about saving money over a more expensive Huawei watch as well.
I talked about this a little bit
during the Huawei Watch review, which will go up tomorrow, I think. One of the things that I really like about the Huawei watch is that the strap it comes with is super nice, like way nicer than any other watch strap that has come with any other Android Wear watch or smartwatch for that matter that I've tried so far. So it's weird, like comparing it, you need to factor in the cost of a new strap because you're going to replace the strap for whatever Android Wear watch you get when you get it. And so you look at the cost of the Watch Urbane and you add another, you know, $25 or $30 for the watch, you're really not that far from the cost of the base model Huawei watch.
Also a good point.
Yep. I like the Huawei watch a lot. I still don't, everyone's making a big deal about the buttons. And
I love the button.
And yeah, I think the button is great. It's so much nicer than the Zen Watch 2 button, which is just crap. But like the only time I use the buttons when I want to turn on theater mode, which isn't very often.
But yeah, it's not really a thing that's integrated well into Android Wear.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, okay.
It's just a home button, yeah, pretty much, which is kind of funky. But I think that if you're somebody that's coming from an original Pebble, so you're used to that $150 or so price point, you know, maybe you're just not interested in going higher. Maybe, you know, it's just a question of either you get an older Android Wear watch or nothing. I think that, you know, you're going to get a solid experience with a last generation watch, not a last gen Moto 360.
No, stay away from that one.
But I think a G-Watch R, because it dropped in price really quick because the Urbane came out, would be solid.
The Guar actually, I mean, for leather that's kind of cheap, wasn't horrible, I thought.
Yeah.
That's the only one I didn't actually put metal on.
It rubbed off on my skin. I wanted to set it on fire.
Your skin is acid.
You know what? It might be, but I have a real problem with some of the things that these manufacturers are calling leather when they are handing out to people, especially Motorola and Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it does make a big difference. I mean, I don't really like the design of the Urbane strap, but that's actually like a leather band versus like this like pressed together leather composite garbage that's available elsewhere.
I had some really good questions. If you want to send us a voicemail, just record your voice and do me a favor, at least stop the car before you record your voice. And email it to
me. I had a question here.
Hear the CB in the background. Doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's like, guys, come on, cut me a little slack. podcast@androidcentral.com to send it there. And we will play it on air like we just did. Thusly. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let us preview the new Nexus event next week. San Francisco, Google, I'll be there. Let's talk about it. Be right back. Okay, so maybe it's not news that supported open source is now widely accepted at the highest levels of enterprise computing, but the extent of adoption is probably broader than you think, and most of the open source running in elite data centers is from Red Hat. It's more than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux, too. Red Hat offers storage solutions, cloud computing, and everything you need for application development. It's all open source, and it's all enterprise grade, and the stats are eye-opening. Red Hat runs in every executive department in the U.S. federal government, every airline, telecom giant, and healthcare company in the Fortune Global 500, New York Stock Exchange, and every commercial bank in the Fortune 500. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 use Red Hat for everything from the critical to the routine. The only thing that's really surprising is how many people, and these are people who know a lot about technology, don't know this. It's almost as if Red Hat snuck in, got comfortable, and quietly transformed the technology business without making a fuss. Sometimes the most disruptive technology is the stuff no one notices at first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining enterprise technology, visit redhat.com. Red Hat. Build on it, run with it, count on it. All right, we ready? Are you ready?
Before we go there,
yes,
there is a question in the Q&A.
Okay.
I can't stop laughing at.
Which one?
I've had to stop myself. It's Tony Watts asking for Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew, what's going on at the Paramount there this evening? Can you check the marquee? Can you see it out the window?
The Tony Award-winning production of Annie is playing at the Paramount. It's been there all week.
Are you going to sing it? You got to sing some. I'm not taking the camera off you till you sing some.
Not much of a theater
the
goer.
The sun will come out tomorrow. I started that too high.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can hit those notes, man.
What else?
God, it's been other great Q&As.
I'm trying to remember. It's been a long time since I've seen Annie. All right, coming up Tuesday. Tuesday morning, in fact, very early in San Francisco. Google is doing a little thing. I will be there. I mean, we're very much expecting two Nexus phones. They've been leaking for weeks, and then the renders leaked out from the place that renders leak out from. I mean, look.
As they do.
I mean, you guys know how I feel about phones before anyone touches them, and I think Russell's in agreement with me here. Like, they look like phones. They have phone specs. We know what the software is going to look like. We know it's going to have some fingerprint stuff. But until we bring it all together, I kind of don't have that much to say. I mean, I can tell you the Huawei one looks a little weird, and I worry about it being large.
Yeah, I want to see Google's pitch for this. Like, what are they going to say is the total theme of this? You know, we know a lot of the individual parts. We don't know how they're going to come together, how they're going to work. You know, how is the execution? I mean, you know, you're doing something wrong if your renders of a phone don't look good.
What
happens when you actually use it?
I said the Huawei one looks a little weird. I think the LG one looks a little weird too. But the names are kind of weird too. The 5X and the 6P. Right,
what does that mean? We have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to imagine that means something. Maybe.
Other than just differentiating from the previous names of Nexus 5 and Nexus 6.
Other than we couldn't call it 7 and we ran out of numbers.
Yeah. And we couldn't do 5S.
Oh, man. And, you know, there's still the fact that there's two of them. Like, there's got to be something different other than the size and the design, right? Right?
Well, I'm just not... we've never had a solid feeling year to year of what Google's going to do with the Nexus. I mean, it's been a different push each year. We've seen phones and tablets together, phones and tablets separately.
And I know we're talking, you know,
why not?
Probably different SKUs and storage options and up to 128 for the Huawei one.
Multiple colors.
Which means different prices. Fine. What sets these phones apart and makes them a Nexus phone? And we're going
to... I want to see what the point is of all this.
Yeah, we're going to do another roundtable this weekend about, you know, what Nexus means to us. And it doesn't really matter what it means to us. It's up to Google. But, you know, yeah, I mean... Whereas the Nexus 6 to me was just a bigger Moto X missing all the good Moto X parts.
It didn't do anything interesting with that.
Yeah, what's gonna set these apart? And I really ignore, you know, the leaks and the rumors as much as I can. It's nice that we have this newsroom to handle all that, because I want to walk in there with a relatively open mind and, you know, see what it is they want to show
us. Yeah. I mean, I'm not poring over leaked spec sheets and benchmarks and things. It just doesn't matter at all.
Well, I mean, spec sheets are spec sheets. I really am interested to... I haven't actually even seen a USB-C device yet, so that'll be cool.
Yeah. That's going to be fun for you.
Yeah, why?
Well, because I keep saying this and people keep looking at me funny when I say it, so I'm going to have someone else that's going to say it for me now. There's this really satisfying click.
Hmm.
When the USB-C port reaches its destination, like it's really solid feeling. It's really kind of surprising. And
it's not flimsy and random like the Lightning connector
or like most micro USB cables, which are, you know, it's a grab bag when you go to put it in the phone as to how it's actually going to feel. It's a really solid connector. I'm a big fan of it so far.
Do you think these are going to be like Project Fi compatible out of the box, or is that still going to be a separate image we have to flash?
That would be cool.
That would be really nice if they did that. I mean, if they don't, I'm going to be worried about what they're doing with Project Fi.
And the Moto X kind of works with Project Fi. I'm not sure if it's 100% there.
Yeah, that's another thing that randomly, when I first got Project Fi, I was like, okay, I'm going to put this SIM card in everything and see what happens. And it didn't work with anything. And then randomly decided to put it in my Moto X 2014, and it just works all of a sudden. Hmm. Pulls the APN off the SIM card. It only works on T-Mobile because it doesn't have the firmware to switch networks, but it just completely works other than that. So it would be cool to get some kind of Fi news with these, or, you know, it ships with a Project Fi SIM in the box. Hey, you could choose to use it. You can choose not to. That would be really neat as well. If we don't hear anything, I'm going to kind of wonder what they're thinking.
So phones, we're not expecting tablets, right? And we haven't seen anything leak.
No, it would be a major out of left field if they just randomly had a tablet for us.
I would say it depends on who the manufacturer is, because some squash leaks better than others. But also, you know, I mean, you do things outside of the traditional carrier system, which is where things usually leak. And, you know, stranger things have happened. New Chromecast, 9to5, Google had an interesting low resolution leak last week or so.
Chromecast, it looks like a tiny ping pong paddle.
I couldn't tell what the hell that was. It was really strange looking. I couldn't tell
if it was round or flat. Why does it have to come in a bunch of colors if it's just going to stick in the back of your TV and you're never going to look at it?
Yeah.
I mean, it just needs to be cheap, do the same things it did before, but maybe with a little more smarts in the software. I mean, Chromecast still gets easily confused when you have something going on and the phone disconnects without your knowledge, and then it's tough to get it to reconnect to your phone for volume and stuff. I think a lot of these the issues with the current Chromecast 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi support aside is kind of a software issue.
I don't know. I don't have that many problems with it.
I just have my phone disconnect, and then, you know, it's not easy. You know, a lot of times if you bring a new phone into the mix or a new tablet, it doesn't really know what's happening on the Chromecast, even though it's supposed to. But, you know, it's still a $35 little dongle. It's kind of hard to complain, I suppose. But, you know, what's a new one going to bring?
So there's that. I mean, they're talking Spotify support. I mean, cool. So you're adding services. And that's a big one. I don't mean to downplay that. Yep. But that's not
that
like
that doesn't require a press event.
Yeah. That's my point. I'm looking at their...
You know, I mean, if you think about the launch of the original Chromecast, though, it was a completely out of left field announcement along with the Nexus 7 2013. So, you know, it could just be an also ran. They just toss it on there and, okay, we have a new Chromecast, then it'll be available pretty much anywhere electronics are sold, just like the current one.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking at those pictures again. I don't know what that thing is. it looks really
100
weird.
By 100 pixel picture of a...
Yeah. I mean, it's low res. What are you going to do? So that's Tuesday. I'm pretty excited. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be fun work.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Anything else about that? I'm trying to think. I don't have any questions yet.
I don't know. I think that people... I want to see what you guys think about Huawei making a Nexus. Like, people are making a huge deal about it. You know, unlocking new markets and things, but it's just another manufacturer to me.
People are making the same deal the same way they made a big deal about when LG first did it. And LG turned out fine. Huawei makes really good hardware, guys. I mean, if only because...
And they've been selling that hardware in the U.S., by the way, guys. They already have... They've had an unlocked phone store for well over a year where they've sold mid-range phones.
And I mean, it's not perfect. And
in the U.S., I should say.
And I still love that picture I took of it between the M7 and the HTC One Max. But I mean, it's solid hardware. Like, there's... I didn't pick up that phone and be like, it's Huawei. No, I'm like complete opposite. Really felt nice. So, like, they can make good hardware. My question would be, did Google let them make good hardware? Because, you know, like we saw with the Nexus 9... compromise happens, and not always in a good way.
Even between the Nexus 4 and then the Nexus 5. Yeah. I mean, the Nexus 4 was built like a tank and solid, and then the Nexus 5 was kind of cheapy. And those are both LG.
I fired up the Nexus 5 the other day, and it's like, ooh, that feels better than I remember.
Nexus 5 is... I wish mine was not bricked from the last OTA, and I'd probably be using it.
Do I need to send you one? I have two again.
Oh. If you have one laying around, go right ahead.
The question is, do we send Andrew the white one or the black one? Hang on, let me get him.
I have the white one currently, and that thing looks like it was used as, you know, armor plating on a truck in war or something. It's torn up.
White or black?
I like the black one, to be honest.
I do too, actually, because it's soft touch. And the
I bought the white one like the minute it was available, and regretted it when it arrived, and I realized it was all glossy on the sides.
Did you ever see the red one, like in person?
Yeah.
Oh.
I felt the red one. Like, that thing gives you a sunburn if you stay too close to it.
That thing was bright.
Yeah.
You want to do some Q&A? Or should we take a break for it? No, let's do some Q&A real quick. Because we're going to do something a little different on this show. And I'll explain that in a minute. By the way, Mike Wolfson, who is doing the redesign of our app in material design, could not make it. Had something come up at the last minute. So we will get to him in a couple weeks. Absolutely. But he will not be here today.
Because if you haven't looked at the app recently... And you're in the beta channel?
Yeah, it's still in the beta channel.
Awesome.
We are getting pretty close. We have a couple actual bugs we need to fix and not just some visual things. And it's not going to be perfect when we put it out, you know, to the production channel, but it's really good. So once we get these, you know, kind of relatively big bugs fixed, I'll be happy with it. But it looks nice. So Mike's done a really good job with it. So he'll be here in a couple weeks, probably. So, let's just start. Mr. Holly, says Ryan Saldana. Must not have met you before.
Yeah, seriously.
Do you feel as though the Moto X Pure Edition's price is an excuse for its shortcomings with the camera versus the flagships? I wouldn't call them shortcomings.
I wouldn't call them shortcomings. Yeah. It is not as capable as the best camera out there. Somebody has to be the best.
Yep.
That's just how that works.
This is really good for $400 baseline phone.
That best camera out there is $200+ more.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not like the camera's going to get better, you know, if the price of this phone goes up. So, Brent says, speaking of Google Voice and Project 5, a T-Mobile number and a voice number that both go to the same phone. How would that work if I drop T-Mobile and move to Fi now that I got an invite?
So the way it works is you no longer have two phone numbers.
Right.
You just have one phone number, which is your Google Voice number, or it could be your T-Mobile number. You can't concurrently have a voice and a separate voice and Project Fi number associated to the same Google account. You'd have to have two separate Google accounts. And at that point, you also can't have both a voice and a Fi number forwarding to the same like landline or other cell phone.
So it really sounds more confusing than it is.
The big thing is its goal is to not be confusing by having one number. And in that point confuses people.
Lars,
in a nutshell there.
Lars says, do you ever go back to some of the very first podcasts? Sometimes I watch the early ones to relive certain moments, Google IOs, Nexus launches, etc. Great fun. Hindsight is great. I don't even want to hear what they sound like. I think the sound quality of them alone is enough to make me want to burn them to the ground. Though I will say, we need to get Mickey Papillon back on at some point. I miss Mickey. He was a good guy.
Yep.
Still is a good guy. Busy guy. Very busy guy. Pablo, have you guys heard anything about a Nexus 8 tablet? Not since everyone tried to invent one last year. No.
Yeah, didn't that arise from that Google promo video or something that showed a random bad aspect ratio tablet?
Mm-hmm.
If you want an 8-inch tablet, you get a Shield tablet. That's a good size.
Can we see Derek and Andrew Kessler have an anger off? Asked Sean Paul. They both express hate so well that it drips off the page. Derek's like, having Derek mad at you is like having your mom mad at you. He doesn't yell. He just gets very disappointed.
And you can tell that he's very disappointed.
Yes.
That's when he's in person. When he writes words at you, he can be kind of scathing.
Well, that's true. I had him very mad at me last weekend, actually.
He's pretty matter of fact.
Yeah. I love giving him a hard time, too. Good guy. Tony, what the heck could the ticker be on the LG V10 predictions? So I'm going straight from California to New York next week for the LG event. And yeah, it looks like it's going to have some sort of secondary display on it because that's worked all the other times like manufacturers up above, have done
just
it.
Think about the display going all the way toward the top bezel, except for there's a cutout on the left side where the camera and the sensors have to be. So there's just this little whoop up, you know, 2/3 of the width of the screen.
That's
You know, it's very much reminds me of the curved edges on the S6 Edge and the S6 Edge Plus, and that they're curved and then they look for something to do with them. And this is like, okay, you're just going to add this little ticker thing at the top and then look for something to put up there.
I'm going in with an open mind, but
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But can I use it as a ruler?
A very short ruler at the top of the screen.
If not, take it back. Let's see. Brent wants to know, Andrew's lamp looks like a Dalek in the background. Russell?
You want to try that word again for me?
Dalek?
There you go.
It's not Dalek? I always thought it was Dalek.
Nope.
I like Dalek. I need to try watching Doctor Who again. I'm sorry. Everyone said post-Ecclestone is when to do it.
Yeah, it got better with Tennant.
Okay. Oh, Tony, I have a Nexus player, moment of silence, and my 14-month-old enjoys snagging the remote and button mashing. The mic light ends up blinking like it's pairing, but it won't pair unless I unpair it. The device settings and repair. I think I had that happen recently, actually. Or maybe I changed the batteries and it was weird.
It's just a Bluetooth.
Yeah.
One, right?
Yeah.
I haven't had anything like that on the Shield TV.
I don't know.
You try, know what happens when a kid just mashes buttons.
Yeah, I was going to say try ordering another remote, but that's not really a good answer to that.
Could just use the Android TV app, remote app on your phone.
I hate that so much.
But the kid can't mash buttons on it if you just lock the screen.
That's true. Ryan wants to know if we're going to see 6 inches finally being the top end for phone size with these new Nexuses. No.
Well, Lenovo just announced a 6.9-inch phone. Yeah. So.
What was the Huawei one? They had a giant phone as well.
I forget what it was. They've gone over 6 before.
Yeah. I saw it in Spain this year, I think. It was not good. Mr. Nickinson, says Ryan, and he knows me, he knows better than that.
Very polite.
If the Moto X Pure Edition was physically smaller, say the same size as the second gen Moto X, would you be more excited about it? I don't know, maybe.
I would.
I would.
It sounds like I'm supposed to be.
I mean, I paid $600 and something for the last one because it fit in my hand and it was good size.
Unfortunately, a smaller size would mean that the battery would either be worse or the screen would be not as good. So you have to take that compromise because the screen is very nice on this phone and the battery is only kind of okay.
It's one of the coolest things I've ever done. And I mean, we can't talk about it too often, but that. There's that group of people who meet up with HTC a few times a year called Frequencies. That it exists is not a secret. But one of the things we did, and I think I can talk about this in relative terms, it's been a long time, was they had some people come in and walk us through the exercise of designing a smartphone and say, all right, you know, you have these specs, and if you pick this spec, what does it mean for size or weight or cost? You know, cost of having that part in this phone. Can you even get it? Can they make enough? And the person leading us through this was somebody who's been in this industry, you know, one of the first people I ever knew and ever met when I took this job. And it was just fascinating the things, you know, and the things he's spitting out off the top of his mind. Well, okay, but if you do that, what about this? And what about that? And what about that? And like, it's easy for us to critique stuff like that, but so much more goes into it. And it was really eye-opening and just fascinating. And how little... I just don't like that. You know, how little that kind of matters in the scheme of things when it comes to, you know, there are reasons behind all this.
Yep. I mean, that's the balance that the Moto X struck. The quality of the screen was a really big deal to them. And rightly so. It's a very nice screen, especially for an LCD display. We kind of knock LCD displays in favor of AMOLED displays a lot. But I will say that having used this, I don't miss the Galaxy S6 display. Like I did when I was using other phones.
I don't miss it, but the GS6 display is absolutely better.
Sure.
I mean, I bounced back to the G4 for like 2 hours before I remembered why I got off it. They got to fix that software. Andrew was right. Yes, I said it. Yes, I said it.
Time marker. Thank you.
Andrew was right. But yeah. All right, a couple more questions. Quadro. And dude, if I'm not saying that right, please let me know. Why do you think Google has decided to hold a press event this year? Why not?
Yeah, again, their consistency has been inconsistent.
Yeah.
This is a new Google, right? New Android, new leadership.
It's changed that much from last year. I mean, there was an event last, it wasn't like a sit down, we're going to talk to you for a while and then, you know, go play with the phones. It was actually very different than that. And I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen this year. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good they do it. It's good for Google to, if you're going to make a phone, you need to do things that phone manufacturers do. And one of the things is show off the product and have people there to talk to you about it. And I thought they did really good last year in New York with all the Motorola people they had in there to, you know, and you're talking to the people who worked on the hardware and the software and, you know, to help explain, hey, here's why this does this.
Yeah. And like we were saying at the very start, that's the important part, you know, explain why all this stuff comes together and what you think, you know, the story is about it.
Yeah. And it really, just like it, having, you know, a list of specs doesn't tell you the whole story behind a phone or renders or whatever, you know, having the people there to fill in those gaps can make a big difference. Now, you know, they're telling a story too, so you gotta, you know, keep that in mind, but it really helps us, I think, do our job and to explain a phone to everybody else before you can go get it. Does that make sense? Maybe. Kinda.
Yeah.
Ronnie wants to know, any idea why the Moto X battery isn't very good? Screen software bug? I don't know that it's not any good. It seemed perfectly normal to me. I mean, it's 3,000 milliamp hour battery that got me, you know, from sun up to sundown, basically. Is it not good? Did I miss something?
I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
How was it for you, Russell?
I didn't have any problems with it.
I think people are having unrealistic expectations of batteries these days.
Remember when the Note 5's battery was bad, even though it wasn't?
The Galaxy S6 battery is terrible. That is, like, the absolute bottom of the barrel as far as battery. It's just too small. It is. It's just too small. But, you know, as far as screen on time goes, the Moto X is probably about an hour better. Which is enough to get me through an entire day. And at really, for the kind of things that I do with a phone, that's an important thing for me. But I think most people would have no problems with the battery on the Moto X.
And finally, and this is a very good segue for what's coming next, Dan says, great job on the next big Robin piece, guys. I'm really interested to see what this type of hybrid tech can become in the future. Do you think this type of cloud usage is the next step in mobile? Also, great choice on the spectacles, Russell.
They are amazing spectacles.
I mean, you guys did a great interview with the NextBit guys. I mean, you did a piece saying, you know, three more things we've learned about this. What's really standing out for you at this point?
So the big thing that I didn't quite understand when reading the stuff that, because you and Andrew had both talked to the NextBit guys and gotten a feel for it. And the thing that I didn't quite understand was how the cloud interaction stuff was going to work. Because in my mind, it was doing all this stuff automatically, and it was doing it all the time. And from a security and consumption standpoint, that raised a lot of red flags. And that's just not what's happening here. The phone's going to work like a normal phone, and then when it starts to get full, NextBit, when you're on Wi-Fi or connected to power, is going to start doing some of these things in the background to free up space and do some of this stuff automatically. And if there are things that you like that you absolutely have to have on your phone, there's a really simple interface for pinning it to the phone and making sure that the NextBit stuff doesn't mess with it.
I thought they kind of oversold the cloud first stuff. It's like, okay, it backs up some stuff.
This is just, you know, background stuff, but it's background stuff that does it in a way that nobody else is doing it. The counter to that being, it really isn't going to take much for somebody else, like especially Google, to be like, hey, so we do this thing now.
Right.
And it's really similar to the way that they handle photos and like making it so that you can reach it from anywhere and attach it to stuff. That's almost exactly how Microsoft does OneDrive for the desktop, if you're a Windows user. So it's not like this is a new concept. It's just new in this environment. And if it ends up being popular, I guarantee you Dropbox and Drive and those guys will flip a switch and do the same thing.
Conventional wisdom right now is that this is really an acquisition play. Like they're coming out with this cloud tech and hoping somebody will buy it from them or buy them, I guess. So,
I mean, it does really cool stuff, but yeah, I think it was maybe a little oversold in that, you know, the phone is just going to work as a quote unquote normal phone. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to change your habits or do anything crazy. You know, the phone isn't loading the operating system off the cloud or anything. You still have 32 gigabytes of local storage and the phone will just work.
I will say I really dig the mint color.
It's really good color
on the Robin. I wanted Samsung to bring their kind of baby bluish version of the S6 or the Note. They didn't actually do it for the Note. To the U.S. and that never happened. And people gripe and they go, oh, you know, those colors are too bright. No, we need more color in our phones here in America. You guys are just wrong. You can have black ones. That's fine. Grab a black phone. I don't care. But we need color.
A friend of ours at Samsung had to kick and scream and got a one of the green ones over here. So mad at him.
It was such a nice shade of green.
It is beautiful. I'm so pissed at the carriers for not bringing that.
And I get it, especially this year with the S6, you know, you got three different sizes to go with and then, you know, four base colors and adding another color is three more SKUs. So it ends up being really complicated from an inventory management perspective, but we need some color.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely appreciate their willingness to do that color. I think I'd like the black one, but you know,
well, even the black one has got those really nice mint accents.
Yep. The software is bright too, so it looks the hardware even in black looks really, really cool. It doesn't look like anything else.
So speaking of Nexbit, here's what we're gonna do. Because Russell and Andrew did such a good job with the interview, I would like to stick it in our audio version of this podcast. So you guys watching the video, you're gonna have to, you know, either go watch that video separately or listen to the audio version of this. So we are gonna take a quick break, and then that's gonna be it for us. We're gonna say goodbye, and we're gonna wrap up this podcast with Andrew and Russell's interview with the Nexbit guys, and Aaron was there, right? From IDEA.
Yep, Aaron from IDEA.
And the big Android barbecue. What did Aaron have to contribute?
He was really excited to be there. and he had some really cool things to say about the design because he had used it too. I was the only person in the hangout who hadn't actually touched one yet. And so he had some neat things to say, was a little resentful of the large speakers on the top and bottom. But after Scott from Nexbit explained why that design happened, he seemed to soften up to it immediately. So
cool.
I'm excited.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break and then enjoy the interview with Nexbit and Aaron and Russell and Andrew. And then we will see you next week, Friday, usual time. We will talk more about all the Nexus stuff and the LG stuff because I'll be back from that. And it's going to be insane. Might even start earlier. We'll have to see. So enjoy Nexbit. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time to talk about Igloo. And Igloo is an internet that you will actually like. Actually, Igloo is a cloud platform that can help you do your best work. You can share files, you can post blog updates, you can coordinate calendars and manage your company projects, all from one useful interface. It's easy to use and easy to configure, even for the most non-technical users. And believe it or not, that occasionally means me. It's built using responsive design. That means everything you can do from your desktop computer, you can do on the go, on your phone, or from your tablet. That's the power of responsive design, and it looks great on all of your devices. So whether you're a large enterprise stuck using SharePoint, or you're a fast-growing business overwhelmed by all the apps out there, you can use Igloo to create an intranet that matches your brand look and feel, simplifies your work, and is accessible on your phone. So sign up now and try it for free at igloosoftware.com/android, and invite up to 10 of your favorite coworkers to try it with you. That's igloosoftware.com/android. All right, as promised, here is Russell and Andrew's interview with Nexbit.
Good signal.
Give them the high sign.
All right, we're live. Sweet. Thanks, Russell. So hi, everybody. I'm Aaron Kasten with IDEA, International Developer Education and Advocacy Alliance. We've got Nexbit here with us
this evening. We're going to do a quick interview with them. And then we've got the Android Central guys, Russell Hawley, contributing editor at Android Central, and Andrew Martinick. I didn't get your role before we introduced you. So what's your role, Andrew?
I'm technically the West Coast editor.
West Coast editor. Awesome. From Nextbit, we've got Mike is the CTO. He's over to the right side, I guess. Video is always inverted. So. Then we've got Tom, the CEO, in the middle, and Scott, product and design, on the left. So I let Russell jump in and kind of take it away with questions. If you have any questions and you're watching and you'd like to ask them, post them in the comments. And if it's something we have time to get to, we'll ask it. So take it away, Russell.
Yay, I will take it away.
Hey, Russell, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing great.
All right, so I guess we should start off for everyone that's watching and just kind of give a basic rundown of Nextbit. Because there's a lot of new smartphone companies out there with a lot of cool ideas, you know. So just kind of give us a rundown of what makes Nextbit special.
Sure. So I think, you know, what's unique about us is that we really wanted to do something that would move things forward, both in terms of software and hardware. Right. We didn't want to just make another. We have an adjective we use here. Yap. Yet another Android phone. YAAP. Right, and that's not something that's interesting to us. We didn't do this just for the sake of doing it. We started Nextbit because we really felt like, you know, the technology existed for people to push things forward. Right, we could actually leverage cloud, for example, at a fundamental level to actually allow phones to perform better than their hardware specs would otherwise enable. And we felt like we could actually do interesting things in terms of the hardware with Scott's help, in terms of how it looks, but also in terms of the business model going direct to consumers. And so, you know, we're not in this just to be another phone in the sea of other phones. We're in this to really try and push things forward, right, as an industry. We really think that nothing really amazing has happened at the operating system level in the last 4 or 5 years. What you can basically do with your phone today is what you could do with your phone 4 or 5 years ago. And we think technology exists to actually do things that are a lot more interesting, and we want to do that.
Yeah, what he said.
Times two. Nice. And now Mike will explain technically how we do that next.
So the first effort to make, you know, this vision come true is the Robin, which I see Scott is holding. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to that final design? Because you've got some kind of you know, bright colors, you know, very sharp angles from all the pictures that I've seen. I've actually yet to hold one myself. And Scott, I understand that that's mostly your fault.
Yeah, exactly. Love it or hate it, you can blame me. Well, you know, I've worked on a lot of phones in my career. For those who don't know, I used to be at HTC for about 7 years, where I ran the industrial design team, and then for the last 3 years, I also managed the user experience team. And I think, you know, since the M7 came out, and then Apple kind of copied that full unibody, and now everybody is kind of actually all take the kind of general execution level, meaning people can do machined aluminum, they can do the zero gap construction. What that's meant is that generally the execution quality has gone up, but it's led to kind of a sea of sameness that's out there. And so, you know, you put an iPhone out, you put all the Android phones out on the table, nothing really jumps out, nothing really kind of jumps out to you. And it's not just color, but it's also terms of like, hey, we're going to round the corners off, we're going to do a lofted back, we're going to do the antenna structure like what Apple and HTC are doing. So it just kind of left kind of a sense of blandness that's out there. And so when we started the process, you know, we've all been in Android almost our whole career, or at least the last decade. Or I guess Android hadn't been around that long, but the last almost 7 or 8 years. You know, I think having been in Android for such a long time and being Android enthusiasts ourselves, we wanted something that we wanted to carry around. We wanted something that really kind of represented kind of our values, and that meant that we wanted a great spec, we wanted a great price, and we wanted a design that really stood out, something that, you know, you could be at a table and people be like, oh, you've got the latest, you've got that phone that doesn't ever run out of space. And so from a design perspective, I really wanted design cues that felt very premium, but didn't kind of use the traditional kind of just tricks of the trade where you, hey, you know, we're going to put a chamfer on to make it a little bit more shiny. If we brush this surface, that'll make it feel a little more value. The premium nature of Robin comes down to the way we've reduced the details, down to the fact that, you know what, you've got a square screen, you have a square phone. Now, We have radii on there, so it actually feels really terrific in the hand. It actually doesn't feel hard to hold, contrary to what some people believe. It actually feels really terrific. And people that actually have held the phone, they grow to love that phone. I know, Aaron, when I met you in Vegas, you were kind of like, oh, it feels better than I thought it would. That's
you,
cool.
You totally changed my mind, honestly. Like when I saw it, I got to see it. I'm not currently a backer. I'll just go ahead and say that. But when I got to see it and play with it, and you know, see the you told me about the fingerprint scanner. Like, yeah, I'm seriously considering it. I've already got one of the coworkers has backed it. So, cool. Yeah, you've changed my opinion. It felt really great in the hand. I loved the like kind of hard edges rather than everything like you said is curved edges now. I kind of liked the more defined edge to it where, it you could tell you were holding it, right? Like, it didn't feel like it was just going to fly out of your hand.
Yeah, that's right. And then I think from a design detail, so, okay, you start with the idea that it's a box. Now you actually have to give it some character, and you have to start giving it some flavor. And so when you look at the dual front-facing speakers, having that soft depression, that just actually starts to make it feel a little bit more approachable. And then you start having, you're like, oh, you know what, we could have this – we're just kind of treating the front-facing camera and the front-facing sensors in a very kind of the same circle size. You go into the back surface, same thing on the back, but you actually start to see this repeated motif where you see the circle details on the front, on the back, on the side when you hit the volume buttons, and all of a sudden you start to have this kind of thing that actually starts to feel, I wouldn't call it playful, but it definitely feels very approachable. It does not feel severe. Even when you look at the midnight color, it doesn't feel severe. And then looking at some other details that kind of make it unique, like, you know, we have the USB Type-C on the back. You mentioned the integrated power button and fingerprint sensor on the side, which for us kind of made sense. We didn't want it down low because that felt like it was a little bit awkward. We wanted it actually where you kind of typically power on your phone, which was higher for us. It's not low like it is on some other phones where you wake it up. So you just pop the button, you hold your finger there, and it logs in. Have these cloud LEDs on the back, which is really just a tool for us to communicate to people on here's how the technology works. You know, like when we're synchronizing your apps and your photos on the phone, those LEDs light up. So just kind of coming up with these kind of all these themes that kind of not only help the phone stand out, but then help us actually communicate our values as a company and the things we think are important.
Cool. Now, Andrew, you actually used this for a couple minutes recently as well. Do you have... Mm-hmm. Anything about your experience with the prototype that you used that you wanted to add to this?
I mean, I have to say that the mint color, the light blue color, is just as beautiful as it looks in like the renders and the press photos that Nextbit has out. It's a little, I mean, I don't think that everybody is going to want to go bold with that, and that's why they have the midnight version, the darker one. But the white and mint one, it just adds to that that very, very unique design that Scott was talking about, because, you know, you just don't see phones with color like that all that often. And, you know, you add that to all the other design elements in it, it really does stand out really, really nicely.
You know, even with the, Andrew, even with the, you know, the, we have the mint phone, but even on the midnight one, we wanted to bring just a little splash of color. So even as we kind of like look at that fingerprint sensor and bring a little bit of that kind of playfulness through, it still feels very, you can feel very conservative with it. Hey, you know what, I'm not that expressive as a person, so I want something a little bit more sedate. But then you can have a few elements that still kind of bring forward that kind of playfulness and that approachability.
I love the blue accents on the midnight phone. That's beautiful.
I know, and it pulls into the software as well. The software has got that color throughout as well. So even if you have the black phone, you turn it on and you can add those colors. It's just kind of neat as well.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
All right. Well, every time, you know, a big focus for you guys is you know, cloud storage and how the cloud is, you know, a constant internet connection is you know, functioning with the phone in kind of a unique way. But every time someone's, you know, mentions the cloud when it comes to mobile phones right now, there's this kind of immediate concern for privacy. I was hoping you guys could talk for a minute about, you know, who you're working with for the service provider for Nextbit Cloud and how you guys envision that working at launch.
Yeah, so we are partnered with Amazon. We actually run all of our infrastructure on AWS, and privacy and security is a very important thing for us. So, you know, when there are new security updates to your Android devices, we're going to bring those to market super fast, just like a lot of the current big players out there have kind of committed. And we allow Google login, so you can sign with your Google account. If you want to enable two-factor authentication, you can enable that as well. For data, we ensure that all your data is encrypted in transit, and we ensure that it's encrypted at rest, right? So
what you'd expect out of your best practices. We're also working with an external firm to go through a security audit to make sure that we are up to snuff before launch.
Nice.
Cool. Now, a big part of how this works, and correct me if I don't say it correctly, when apps are not functioning, when they haven't been activated for a while on the Nextbit Robin, they're actually going to be almost uninstalled and kind of backed up to the Nextbit cloud. Did I explain that correctly?
Yeah, I think it's actually not so much based on not using them for a long time. We really actually only take stuff off the phone or downsample your local copy of Photo when you actually start running out of space. So it really depends on each user and kind of their ability. But you're right in the sense that when actually you start running out of space on your phone, we'll actually look at your usage patterns and adapt to how you use your phone. So if you haven't traveled anywhere, say, in like 6 months and you haven't opened your United Airlines app, hey, you know, we can look at that and say, oh, that's a pretty good one to offload. Now, we leave behind a shadow icon behind, so it still looks like it's on the phone, but it's not really, just like you said. And when you need it, you just tap the icon, it downloads the APK, it reinstalls, hooks back up the credentials, and it's like you've never removed it from the phone.
So that sounds like a cool idea, but I had a lot of questions about how specifically that would work because, you know, you brought up a travel app, and one of the things that struck me as kind of interesting about that is that a lot of the travel apps that I use, they're particularly useful when I'm not connected to the internet. So that kind of brought up, you know, a functionality issue if there was going to be a way to kind of, you know, maybe pin things that are never backed up. But at the same time, you know, when an app is pulled, you know, what happens to that app when it's updated by the developer in the Play Store? Because the APK is kind of living elsewhere at that point, right?
Yep. So there's two questions there. One is about, hey, can I pin an app and never have it be off or have it never be removed from the phone? Which you can do, and we'll show you a demo here in just a little while that kind of shows how that actually works. Yeah. And then, Mike, do you want to talk a little bit about the subsequent question?
Yeah, so for apps, when an app gets freed up on your device, when it gets offloaded, and you choose to bring it back, we actually make sure to bring back the same version that was offloaded. And we did this particularly because, as a user, when you choose to install an app or upgrade to a new version, the developer might have changed the terms of service or the permissions on the app. So it would not make sense. Let's say you haven't used Spotify in 9 months, and now if Spotify wants to read your SD card and you're not okay with that, we shouldn't put that version on your phone, right? You agreed to Spotify, you know, version 2.0, which only had these permissions. So we make sure that the version of the app that you get back on your phone is the original version that you installed. But as always, once it's installed or once it's restored back on the device, you can choose to upgrade that version in Google Play, and then that will get back to
you. Yeah, would it be helpful actually for us to run the demo now, maybe, just to give you an overview of how the whole system works?
Sure. Yeah, that would be good.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, we're going to switch cameras.
That's Alistair there, whose face you're seeing.
I'm going to do my best because there's going to be an audio version of this, so I'm going to try and explain what we're seeing as well.
Okay, and
awesome.
Mike will narrate.
Yeah,
all right, we'll see how the camera magic works when it switches here.
It's interesting. So it sounds like there's a lot less of the, like, removing things from your phone and using cloud backups than kind of what I originally thought, which I think is good.
I mean, the idea is that the phone will work, you know, it doesn't have a reliance on the cloud as much
right.
as the cloud just kind of helps blur the line, or the way that the system integrates it helps blur the line between what's up there and what's local, mm-hmm. which I think makes a lot of sense. And when I looked at the demo of it, it was seamless in that way. You know, it wasn't so much push and pull things like, okay, I don't want this anymore, throw it up there. It just, mm-hmm. you know, like Scott was saying, you know, adapts and responds to if you haven't used something and you're running out of space, you know.
Hey, we have a phone.
Then you don't have to worry about it.
Phone.
All right, we got a phone. So I've got my Nexus 5 here that's running a beta version of our software that you will expect on Robin. And I've been using this phone for about 10 months. So let's turn it on. And what you're seeing here is Lollipop 5.1.1. We've already started working on porting to M. So you guys should have some pretty good news on that hopefully soon. But let's take a look at my apps here. And I've got my phone. I've got a bunch of apps. I've been using it for about 10 months. I'm running out of space. And you'll notice Spotify and TED are look a little bit different. So for those of you who are on the audio-only tour, you have your home screen and two icons, Spotify and TED. They are shadow icons. The icons are grayed out. They're slightly translucent. And the reason for this is because my phone's running out of space. I haven't used these two apps in 8 months. And this is what Robin did, right? My phone freed up some space. So, but let's just say that today someone tells me, hey, Mike, there's this really great promotion on Spotify. You have to check it out. So all I need to do is simply tap on the Spotify icon right here, and I'm going to do that. And you're going to notice that as Spotify downloads, you're going to see a download progress bar on your home screen. You're going to see the icon color start to saturate in, and you're going to see a little blinking light as Spotify installs. Now, as Scott mentioned earlier, and as probably a lot of our users, and Russell mentioned earlier as well, you can pin your applications. You can click on the little fab button here, and you'll notice there's a pin icon and a little cloud icon. So for those of you who can't see this, in Material Design, they introduced the fab, which is kind of a new design paradigm for software, and we've introduced that in the launcher as well, so you can always get access to your apps that are in the cloud, see which apps have been offloaded, and see which apps you've chosen to pin. So you can always pin your apps on your device in case you don't want them offloaded. And now the Spotify is restored. I will simply tap and launch Spotify. And what you're going to notice is I didn't have to type in my username or password again, right? I was able to pick up exactly where I left off 8 months ago. And there's another case I'm going to show is we've all been in a scenario or we all know someone that their phone is pretty full and you go take a video or a picture. So I'm simply going to start taking a video here with our camera application. I'm going to film a 30-second video. And oops, while I start that, and this is going to be a pretty boring video for everyone here. But so normally when your phone's out of space and you go to film a video, you're going to get an error message, right? Insufficient storage, and you've lost that moment. And I'm just going to, I'm 15 seconds in. And what your phone's going to do now, what Robin does, is because it intelligently adapts to you, it actually knows right then and there you're trying to film a video, and it knows what apps are important to you right at that moment, and it actually won't surface that error message to you. It's actually going to free up space on the device based off of how I've used it previously. So the longer I use Robin, the more I use it, the more intelligent it gets. So I filmed some video, and I didn't get any error messages. I will go back to my home screen. And the home screen looks a little bit different now, in particular for those of you also on the audio tour, Netflix and Pandora are now shadow icons, right? So because I haven't used Netflix in several months, and I haven't used Pandora either, in order to free up space, we've offloaded those applications on the device. Now, when we say offload, what's really happening is we're just simply freeing up space right now. We're not actually uploading data, because what we do is we will intelligently synchronize your apps when you are plugged in and when you're on Wi-Fi. Right, so if you think about your kind of daily routine, you charge your phone every night, you probably have Wi-Fi at home, maybe you have Wi-Fi at work. That's when we take the opportunity to really synchronize your data, and we want to make sure that we don't eat into your data plan or drain your battery. Right, so we really want to use the cloud to supplement your device, not hurt it. The next thing I'm going to show you is like images. What happens about images if they've been moved off into the cloud? And because we do this at the operating system level, I'm just going to open up Gmail and simply go to Attach File. Now, normally, if I want to get to an image that's in Dropbox or SugarSync, I have to open up that app. But now, I just have to attach any image as if I were to do it normally. So open up Gmail, go to Recents. I've got this great little picture of one of our developers' dogs and a sheep. And you'll notice that what happened was I attached the image was actually not on my device, and instead we actually fetched the high-resolution image from the cloud, attached it to Gmail, super seamless in our interaction. Now, if I were on a tiered data plan or LTE connection, we'll prompt the user and ask them if you want to download this image, or you can use a locally cached version, and we use a screen resolution as a locally cached But that's kind of a basic rundown of the software experience. Also, you guys can sort of see this on the Kickstarter page. I think there's several YouTube videos out there if you're just really curious. But, yeah. Any questions? Concerns?
I was impressed how quickly the photo loaded.
Yeah, well, I mean, the photo is, it's a 1.1 megabyte image. And we are on Wi-Fi here, so.
Right. Yeah, it's still fast. Like, I mean, you clicked it was instantaneous, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, so the point is, you know, I think there's been a lot of legacy. I think we all have kind of preconceived notions now of what cloud storage is, right? And it's these solutions like Dropbox or Google Drive. And those are really legacy era storage solutions, right? Those are essentially the idea of I either want to synchronize files so that I can access them, like my work, you know, Word documents on my phone or on my home PC. It either solves that problem or it's literally just an extra storage locker or a backup locker in the cloud. What we're doing with Robin is we really want to push things forward like to that next generation where it's like, you know, offline, I have 32 gigs, my phone is normal and everything like that. But when I'm connected online, it's as if I have inserted 100 gigabyte, you know, memory card into my phone seamlessly, and that just becomes the local storage, right? It's all right there. I can interact with it normally, and I can see it normally. And because of the way we do it, where we just back up serendipitously whenever you're on Wi-Fi, and then to offload stuff, we don't even use the wire. The data footprint for our Robin will actually look virtually identical to data footprint from any other Android phone, right? We're not going to do anything that's going to take up, like Mike said, your data plan or drain your battery. So we're being really thoughtful about it, but we do want to move things forward a little bit, you know, to that future where you just have all your stuff available to you on any kind of smart device that you authenticate to, right? It is kind of trying to move in that direction that we all know is coming, but nobody really seems to be making a big effort to push forward.
I think also philosophically, just the idea is that you just use your phone like you've always used it. You don't have to think about this kind of active management. You don't have to go in, like when you actually lose that moment, you know, I got to go delete some apps, I got to do some photos, I got to push some stuff up to the cloud, I've got to make a lot of decisions. You know, you don't have to worry about that. We can help that situation out. So I think philosophically for people, you know, you keep using your phone like you've always used it.
Yeah, my sister was here earlier and actually was complaining that she had no space on her 2-year-old phone and like couldn't install Slack, which is what we were using for chat, because she had to remove other things. And so I'm definitely going to be recommending the Robin for her. It seems like a good fit.
Awesome.
We see a lot of interest, I think, from iPhone users, which is strangely enough, and I think it's because of that message. There's a number of 8 gigabyte or 16 gigabyte iPhones out there. You know, honestly, they're a feature phone in 3 months, and Apple just announced last week that they're still doing one. Yeah. So there is, I think, a big opportunity to actually bring some people back to Android, which is a great platform, obviously.
Yeah. Cool.
My last question for the night, you guys are going to be at the Big Android Barbecue showing off the next bit Robin, hopefully. The big question there was people who are going to the event, are they going to get a chance to play with one themselves and take a look at some of the stuff that we've looked at tonight?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people will be able to do hands-on time.
In fact, by that point, I know we're showing the demo right now on the Nexus 5, but that should be, the plan is to have that running on Robin by that point. So that's
awesome.
It's my guy to commit to me.
Come on.
No pressure or anything, man. No pressure.
I'm going to go back to work right now.
Yeah, Scott should have probably hashed that out before he came on here.
The bus. No, we're hoping that's the case.
How many days do I have?
You guys can always just reschedule the barbecue, right?
Sure. What works best for you guys? Like,
well, let's go like 24 or 48 hours before, so you have plenty of time.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll just let the attendees know. They don't mind.
Cool.
They're all cool with it. Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Any last things? We did get one question. I think it was a misunderstanding. They thought we were demoing an app. This was actually a phone operating system and a phone we were looking at.
So it's way deeper than that.
Yeah, definitely a platform level thing or full integration. I did get separately another question, which I don't think you guys can actually answer, but I'll ask anyway. For things, you know, kind of like long-term future plans for you know, setups like Google's Project Fi, is that something you guys are looking at for the future?
Yeah, you know, look, I think there's a lot of transitions in the industry right now that are going to come up. I think all the Android OEMs are about to face or already have been facing serious upheavals. There's a lot of interesting activity in MVNO space internationally, right? Xiaomi just announced something in China. There's a lot of activity in Japan, and of course things like Project Fi. To the extent we have nothing to announce, but to the extent Google opens that up to more partnerships, it's definitely something we're going to talk to them about. We have a pretty good relationship with the home team that we've maintained. You know, the thing about what we're doing is we're still, you know, we're committed 100% to being a good player in the ecosystem, right? And to keep those relationships good and to actually, you know, add things that we think aren't being addressed by other players, not just try and, like, reinvent things that already exist, right, in order to try and differentiate that way, right? So yes, well, those are definitely things that we're going to be looking towards as Google opens that up.
All right. Nice.
I think that goes wonderful. Along. I was going to ask what the future was for Nextbit, but I think that kind of covers it. So,
one of the cool things about Kickstarter and kind of the company that we want to run is that we want to have a two-way conversation with people, not just a one-way. I mean, Tom always likes to say, like, the era of you make a widget, you have a pretty person holding the widget on the television screen. We all watch that and think, oh, I'm going to be hanging out with that pretty person, or I'm going to be beautiful if I buy that widget. We think that in the world that we live in now, where consumers or people, they're so knowledgeable, not just people that are going to Big O and Joe Barbecue, but everybody. You look at the popularity of the tech blogs kind of across the board. We think there's a great opportunity to kind of have a two-way conversation as opposed to one-way conversation. So, you know, just during Kickstarter, we're finding out, like, I mean, it seems obvious that we should have thought of this, but yes, we had a lot of demand around a Verizon, about supporting Verizon, and so kind of going back and actually making sure that we're doing a Verizon SKU. But we also hear stuff like, hey, you know what, help me have better battery life, not just a bigger battery, but like, can you do something there with the cloud? Can you make my photos better using the cloud? So there's lots of, can you make the phone setup better using the cloud? So we think that there's obviously a lot, you know, we have a long roadmap of things that we want to do and we can kind of start working on, but having that two-way conversation really helps us prioritize kind of what we should be doing.
So tell us real quick before we adjourn, where do you get the next bit? When can people expect maybe it to start shipping? Give us the...
So right now I think there's 8 days left on the Kickstarter campaign. So it's not too late to become a backer and make sure you're one of the first to get the devices. So we'll start shipping to the early birds will get their phones in January. Everybody else will get their phones in February. They will, of course, try to make...
When you say early birds, we're actually hoping to ship every Kickstarter backer a phone in January.
We are.
Not just
we
the
are.
Early bird tier.
That's yeah. true. All right. Yeah. But we haven't publicly said that before, but yes.
nice. Jeez, Scott's on a roll today.
So we want to under-promise, not over-deliver, but that went out the window. So yes, we'll actually try and get everybody on Kickstarter their phones in January, and we think we can do it, but we don't want to commit to it.
That's right.
So worst case, backstage start again in February, and then that's when it'll also be available to the general public, right? We'll have it directly on our e-commerce site as well as certain partnerships worldwide.
Awesome. Sounds like you have taken precautions to avoid the Kickstarter trap of, like, you know, overpromise, underdeliver, way overpromise, never deliver.
That said, this two-way relationship is really important, so we think you get there by being honest and by respecting your customer. If you don't do that, you know, you're forget it. Nobody's going to engage with you in a conversation. And we have, you know, working EBTs already. We're working right. with Foxconn. They make every phone you've ever bought that you've loved or hated for the most part.
They make the M7.
Oh, okay. sorry. So except the M7. We are confident in our schedule, right? We waited on the Kickstarter. This wasn't like a, hey, we'll hopefully get it out. This was, we have a schedule, our manufacturer's locked in, we're moving forward. So far, at least, we're super confident in our original schedule.
So you kind of teased it earlier, but so you think maybe by Big Android Barbecue, we might see a production, close to production operating model? Or
what version will it be? Is that
still be EVT?
Still be EVT.
Yeah, it'll still be EVT, which means we still have 3 major builds with Foxconn before we go to mass production. But what I was alluding to earlier was I'm hoping that we can get our working software off of the Nexus 5 and on to Robin.
Awesome.
Right now we have it running, but it's super buggy and flaky, so it's not ready just yet.
Sure. Okay, so final question. What's the price? So Kickstarter and release, if
sure.
you can.
At retail, it'll be $399. And at Kickstarter, if you get in early, it's $349, as in get in the next 8 days, I guess, before it'll be $349. You get $50 off.
Awesome.
Plus, you get a quick charger along with that.
Yeah, and very likely you'll get a T-shirt. We're about 30K away from that stretch goal as well.
Yeah.
So it's very likely that'll be part of it. And, you know, I think there's a full spec rundown on our Kickstarter, but obviously, you know, for $399, you're actually getting a damn premium set of specs, right? It's Snapdragon 808. It's got megapixel rear, 5-megapixel front. It's got a PDAF on the back camera, fingerprint sensor embedded in the power button, USB Type-C, NFC, dual front-facing speakers with dual amps, dual tone flash,
100 gigs, cloud storage. Yeah. Your phone. I mean, that's a big. The lifetime of your phone.
Oh, and you guys, I think your readers will appreciate this. You know, we mention this sometimes, but it gets lost because it's not really mainstream press. But it is also shipping with an unlocked bootloader, and we will honor your warranty no matter what you flash on it. Right.
Our audience definitely cares about that.
Yeah.
I believe that, right? So you can flash whatever you want, whatever experimental builds you want on this phone, and your warranty's good. Any problems with it, any manufacturing defects, anything's wrong with it, we take it back and honor that warranty. And we'll release everything we can to enable easy flashing and easy ROMing of our devices, as well as the unlocked bootloader. So that's a big thing for us.
What about your ROM on other devices? Is that something you've given some consideration to?
It's come up a lot in terms of questions recently. It's not in our immediate plans. Longer term, we definitely want to look into it. But for
it's
now,
it's tough to monetize that.
But for now, it's only on Robin. You gotta, you know, at the end of the day, we want to make this whole product right. It's
right.
It's fun. Mike and I, you know, we're on the original 1.0 launch team at Google, and you know, it was so amazing working on the G1 and getting it out there. And we left Google in 2010 to a couple of software things. And it's really nice to get back and get back with Scott and do actual tangible hardware that people can touch and interact with. It's, you know, software is amazing. It's you know, scalable. It's replicable. It's, everything's great about it. But having, you know, created something that somebody holds in their hands in the real world and you can see that, there's just nothing like it. So
yeah, it's awesome.
You know, products.
Well, congratulations. It's been fun watching the company kind of grow and develop over the last couple of years, seeing the thing with Cyanogen happen, and then now you've, you know, gotten to where you are now, and it's been really cool and fun to watch. And so I look forward to see what you do next and what the future holds for you, and look forward to hanging out at the Big Android Barbecue. Pretty pumped about that.
Cool.
And maybe back in – I got 8 days to decide, make up my mind, huh?
That's $349. You can't lose.
Yeah,
that's a great price for. I mean, it's one of the best designed phones I think I've seen in a while. So congratulations to you, Scott, as well on that.
Well, thank you,
Russell, Andrew. Any other questions before I adjourn this thing?
No, I think that's awesome. I think it gives everybody a good, you know, snapshot of what they need to know that maybe they wouldn't get just from reading through the Kickstarter page. It's great.
Cool. I think I covered all the questions that came in. Great questions from the people watching. Thank you for contributing as well. Thank you again to Nextbit. They'll be out at the Big Android Barbecue October 22nd and 23rd. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be the best event we've ever put on. Can't wait for you guys to come out and see that.
Nice.
Russell will be there as well. Andrew, I think you're going to miss this one, unfortunately. Maybe. I'm going to convince you to come somehow.
Yeah, so we'll see. You got time to work me over here.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody who's watching and who's going to be listening later. Make sure you check us out, bigandroidbarbecue.com, idea.io, we're the organizer of the event, Android Central for putting this on for us, and again, Nextbit for joining us. This is a great time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks.